Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Connecting the Dots. This week I speak to a good friend of mine from the other side of the world, Jaden Beveridge. He's an Australian animator, YouTuber, VFX artist, and incredible cinematographer and photographer. As you can probably tell, Jaden is a Swiss army knife of creative tools, knowledge, and experience. He's worked on huge Hollywood films such as Lego Ninjago, Tomb Raider, Peter Rabbit, and more, alongside also creating YouTube videos for big YouTubers under the name Atomic Monkey Pro. And one of his largest videos, which we discuss at length in this episode, recently hit 100 million views, which is an insane accomplishment to say the least. I mean, 100 million people is quite a lot. We discuss his journey, focusing on how he became extremely talented in multiple creative areas, how he got involved in the movie world, and his advice for networking in the creative industry. And we also talk about YouTube and how it was 5 years ago compared to now when it comes to growing an online audience. And then he just gives a lot of advice to beginners in animation. And we discuss a lot more than this, but that's just a little bit of a sprinkle as to what it is that you can expect in this episode going forwards. This was the second podcast episode I had ever recorded, so I'm a little bit rough around the edges. So if there's anything in the audio where some audio seems to overlap or anything like that, please ignore any of those hiccups as you head through this great episode of Connecting the Dots. But other than that, I think that's the intro done with. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Jaden. So I'm just going to jump straight in with it with the first question.
Yeah.
I'm just going to get straight into this. So obviously people know you online as Atomic Monkey. That's sort of like your branded name when it comes to sort of like YouTube.
Yep.
You sort of like have, in a way, like two personas. Like you have Jaden and then you have Atomic Monkey, where like Atomic Monkey is like the animation, like YouTube side of it.
Yep.
And then like your full name is sort of like your film Hollywood sort of like career that you're on a pioneer move to go and get. And so I just wanted to talk about both of those today in this podcast. Just jump up between both because you're talented in a lot of ways. You do a lot of different stuff. I just kind of want to jump into that sort of like your career, talking about how you got started with animation, YouTube, how you help out other YouTubers, how you're a fantastic like photographer, cinematographer, director, all of that sort of stuff.
All of it.
Yeah, I'm interested in speaking about all of it. So the first question I have basically is just right at the beginnings. How did you get started in animation?
How did I get started in animation? That is a... See, it's always been, whenever I've answered a question like that, it's always been, how did you get started in film? Not animation.
Oh, really?
But animation is where my career is, I guess. But they also are very similar stories. So like way back in the beginning, apparently I could never put down a camera. Like when I was like 3 years old, this is what my grandparents keep telling me, is that I always had a camera in my hand, but I can never remember this, or I can never find any pictures of it, probably because I was taking them all.
Was it like a film camera?
I have no clue. I think it was like a disposable film camera. Because I do remember like having a lot of disposable film cameras. Now I have an old Canon from like 1970 or something, an old like 35mm camera. But to get back to those days, but I think when I was like 9, I think we were playing cricket at the park, and cricket, that's an English thing as well. Right?
Yeah, that's an English thing as well. We love losing that just in the final against India. It's always the way.
It's always against India. So I think we were playing cricket at the park in like the school holidays between term semesters, and we were taking a break, and my dad was like, "Oh, what?" This was like with all of my brother's school friends, and then me. And I think my dad said, oh, why don't we make a movie? Because my brother at school at this time, he was like seven. At this time, they had like a group of them and they called themselves the Bad Boys. Like a really terrible joke that didn't have anything to do with like... It was just they called themselves the Bad Boys because they thought it was cool. But then we made a movie out of it that, I mean, my dad, you know, wrote it and shot it and directed it and like edited it and everything. But it was just full of like, it was the first thing we had ever done. It was like Windows Movie Maker with text transitions and everything. Oh, and I think gosh. I still have like a DVD burnt.
Do you still have it?
Yeah, somewhere. It might be at my parents' house, but no one has ever seen it.
Oh, you have to find that and put it on YouTube. So how old was you when this was made then? Like 7, 8?
I was like 9. I was 9. So oh that was gosh. Like 12 years ago now. So over half of my life now. Wow. Oh my
God. Don't make us getting feel old, please.
So I think we did that in one like school holidays. We shot it in like a day, completely out of order. And then my dad edited it in like an afternoon the next day or something. And the weekend mm-hmm. after, we got like everyone together at one of the family's houses of all the kids that were in it. I was playing one of the bad guys in the group and we were like the Sith, but I can't really remember. I haven't seen it in years. So we all watched it together and everyone really liked watching it, being in a movie and all everything yeah, like yeah, that. Yeah. That the next school holidays, I was like, Dad, we need to do another one. Dad, we need to do another one. And that time I started actually, I think I had just gotten like Adobe Fireworks or like some Adobe suite. And I was like, Dad, I'm going to do special effects and things. And I think I ended up just drawing like a box that I put on top of a video and it wasn't even moving or anything. It was like a portal and we had like everyone rolling through the portal and jumping through the portal and like going back in time or whatever. And
you were 10 years old at this point.
I was 9 at that point still. And then this is also the story of how I got started on YouTube originally is one of my friends and family friend, we started making these shows called Mr. Random and it was just us filming things and doing effects and stuff. I think I was importing the footage into Flash and like animating tennis balls or something flying around when he hit them with a tennis racket. And then I put this on YouTube and this is back in the days where parents were like, oh, don't put things on YouTube.
Yeah, they were like, privacy, you're a bit and scared. Stuff. Yeah, yeah. It's so different now. Now they're just like, kids, go ahead and do it and become a millionaire. It's shifted so much.
I think my parents made me take it down. They won't admit to that now. They will keep on saying, if I tell them that they did, they'll be like, no, we didn't do that. But I'm pretty sure they did. Anyway, I can't find it anymore. And this was like in 2006 or 2007. I forget. No. Yeah, 2006, I think. I was 9, so that would be 2005.
Okay, yeah, 2005.
End of 2005, start of 2006, that sort of thing. Like right at the start of YouTube. And I had found it somehow. I always found these social network sites way too young.
Yeah, same as me, yeah.
And then never used them until everyone else found them. I think I found Facebook when I was like 6.
Wow, that's really young.
Like right as it, I was in like grade 2 at school and I found it, but I don't think I made an account, or maybe I did, but it was like an account with like a different name or something and I never looked at it. So I did that. This was all at the time we were making these movies. We were under the banner of like School Kid Production with a K. So it was like SK All Kid just because we were cool kids.
Oh my gosh.
And then I ended up making like a bunch of like short films for my birthdays. So when I had like a birthday party, I was like, I'm going to make a movie, guys. And then everyone wanted to do it because they were like, we want to make movies too. This is cool. I think I made a Star Wars thing one year for my birthday when I was 10.
Yeah, I think everyone has always made like a Star Wars film with like a lightsaber.
I want to make another one. I want to make another one, but this was like a lightsaber tournament. And then I like back in the day before I knew what After Effects was in Premiere, we were still editing in Movie Maker, but in Premiere you could export a video clip as a film strip and import that into Photoshop and then import that back into Premiere and it would give you it back as a video file. So I would export these film strips into Photoshop and draw frame by frame over all the lightsabers with the lasso tool.
Yeah. I remember you used to do something with, I think it was Adobe Flash, like Macromedia Flash, and you had like the onion layers. Do you remember that? And you had to like draw over it and like frame by frame. Like, it's so different now.
Yeah, it's so much easier and quicker. Oh, but to get back on track, I guess after that, while I was doing this, I started doing sometimes in the school holidays, there was this place called Film Bites back in Perth, and they ran like school holiday, like one day classes with like do a green screen and then thing and things like that. So I did a few of them, and they've grown to a pretty large company now. They're like a casting agency for kids' talent and everything. But at the end of every year, they showed everything that everyone made in like a cinema. And because you're like a 10-year-old kid, you're like, oh my God, my stuff's being shown in a movie cinema. So I went to them and they had these photos.
You're like, I'm the next Steven Spielberg.
Exactly. But they had these printed like marketing photos of kids doing things on the computer. And I had just seen in these presentations of things, these animations. And I'm like, what is this? This is so cool. I could do this. And I saw, I didn't know what they were using, but they had this marketing photo printed in the lobby. And I was looking at it and this kid animating, and it said Macromedia Flash 8. And I was like, Mom, I need to get that. So I got...
Yeah, that's where it all started.
Yeah, that's where all my animation started. And it was, I got Macromedia Flash 8. I went back to Film Bytes like 3-4 years later to do an advanced animation in Flash, which was then taught by Ross from Game Grumps.
Oh, really?
This is when he was teaching in Perth, because he was from Perth. So this is when he was teaching. That was like a full year course of doing things. That was so cool. He was actually making the original Gamerverse at that time. He's now working on actually expanding it into a proper show.
So I mean, I guess at the start of it then, like your dad was the one who sort of like helped like notice that you like had a camera in your hand always and was just like, why don't we make a film? Like,
yeah,
it's, I always find that whenever I hear like people who are like really successful at such a young age, that they always had someone in their family who just sort of like put them onto that, like they, like someone who's like, oh, she's a really good dancer, they take them to dance school, and then they like blow up because they started so young, right? And I guess like your dad was in that position to do that. I know it's like with like Casey Neistat and with like his son Owen, like he used to make like loads of short films with his son when he was really young. I feel like just doing stuff like that like rubs off on you in like a good way when you're a kid, because I mean, like for me, I've never had sort of something like that. No one in my family has ever been like great on like editing programs or on computers. Like technology just skips everyone in my family, especially when it comes to like cameras and stuff like that. And so I always had to like teach myself and build like my way up. And I would say like you were starting at like 9. I would say I probably got into it mostly around 12 years old. And I think that for me, it was more just a luck thing. Like I just liked the computer and I sort of just stumbled my way onto YouTube and like began just making like tutorial videos. And so I guess that's kind of interesting how I've sort of like swayed more into like staying on online video, and you like really enjoy like film for like mainstream film, that is. And I think that is probably just because that was like your first thing when you were a kid. That was the first thing in like the media space that you like really got your hands on.
I think what was lucky for me was at the time my dad actually owned a very large video store.
Oh, that's cool.
So
you were immediate, you like, basically born into the family. It was like, you're going to run this, like this shop.
No. This is like a franchise thing that he bought.
Okay.
He didn't buy the whole franchise. He bought like one store to run it. He did that for like 9-10 years. I don't know how long, but my dad's like an extremely smart person. And he always has had an interest in technology and films and things. So he's always watching movies at home. He's always studying and learning new things. He likes learning new technology, like that sort of thing. So I think that was really helpful.
Like really useful,
So I think I had a computer that was mine and my brother's to use when I was 4. like an old Windows 98, like huge box thing that we had on our floor of the house, that sort of thing. And it was just being able to have that freedom to create, I guess. Yeah, well, that was very
useful. I never really created. I remember just being like in school, like once a week, they would have something called like Golden Time. And it was basically like the free hour, like the hour before the end of the day on a Friday, where they would just let kids do whatever. And I remember always like absolutely fighting to get like to be the best kid that week so I could go on the computer. And like, I was always like the best behaved kid. And so like I would always like morally have first dibs on the computer. But because I would always get the computer week after week, the teacher was always like, no, Jamie, let someone else have a go now. And it used to like make me upset because like, We didn't like really have a computer at that point at home, especially one that was connected to the internet and that was fast.
So
like I remember like getting out like the Ethernet cable, like little dial up modem noise. Like that's like nostalgia to me. And I remember like when I used to like eventually starting having like broadband internet and being able to absolutely just go online, search whatever, go review videos, go play games on like Cartoon Network. And it was like from there was where I really started to go into like the video side of it, because before then I would just like mess about in Paint when I was at school. And I remember in like secondary school, like I had like Macromedia Flash and I would like animate like circles jumping around, and I used to make like videos of that. When you started to do animation more and more, I mean, like, your most viewed video on your personal channel was 1.4 million views. And then your most viewed video on someone else's channel, which is Beijing Canadian, like, huge Minecraft YouTuber, is 97 million views.
It's up to 97 now.
It's 97. Yeah, you're nearly going to break 100
million.
I've
lost track. I'm waiting for the 100.
I never knew it was that big, because I remember when it dropped and I watched it. I'm always impressed by how you managed to make your animations look so good. Like, they're so smooth, especially in Minecraft. And then for it to just be at 97, because like, I've watched it a few times, but it came out like a few years back now, right?
It came out like 4 years. That came out, I finished high school.
Like 2014, I'd guess.
2013. Yeah, that was extremely helpful for my career as well. So that all started, I can't remember if you were as well, but I somehow became, through a mutual friend of ours, a director for Machinima Realm back when they were doing Minecraft stuff. So I somehow got to be a director on Machinima Realm and never posted a video. I never really had any videos on my channel, but it was just I did animation and then I was making this music video for him at the time that I released on my channel like 4 years later after finishing it, but then took it down because I didn't want to have it there because it was like obscenely like vulgar and it was just horrible. But so I somehow got this gig and I was going to make this like Minecraft or something else animated series for Machinima Realm. And then Joel Rubin left to go work on the main Machinima channel. And he was my main point of contact to do things. So just me sitting there on the Facebook group of the Machinima Realm directors of all these like huge Minecraft and like gaming YouTubers, like everyone was there, just everything. And then one day this guy asks like, hey, are there any like animators out there? I want to make a music video. This is like in April of 2013. And I was like, yeah, man. So I just added him. It was the Beijing Canadian. At the time he only had, I think he had just cracked 100,000 subs. And then we were talking for like 2 months. He got up to like 250,000 subs and his Hunger Games like series was going really, really well. So we were like, we're going to make this Hunger Games song. I'm like, yeah, cool. I can do it when I finish school in like 6 months. So I finish high school. Like I do my last exam and then I go away on leavers, which is just a thing that like high school graduates do here. I like got my uncle and took his boat and we went to this island and just hung out there for a weekend, played mini golf and riding bikes around. It was just a good time. And I come back from that and start working on this music video. And 2 weeks later, I finish it and I give it to him and he uploads it that day. And it just explodes.
And how many views did that get?
In the first month, it got 8.5 million.
No way.
I remember it was like every hour for like the first day, it felt like it was just going up 100,000. Like any time you refreshed it, it's like, oh, there's 10,000 more people.
You just not
it.
Focus on anything. You were just constantly hitting that refresh button.
Well, I stopped refreshing it, and then my dad got his tablet out and was refreshing it.
It was like, you've hit the mainstream. You're a success. I mean, like, did that blow your channel up?
Did that blow my channel up? I think yeah. I think before that I had like 2,000 subs from doing like, I did Minecraft Let's Plays and some small animations and things like that. I think that only got me to like 8,000. It probably has helped me get all of my other up to 16,500 subscribers that I don't really post anything for anymore. But I want to change that.
Subscribers don't mean anything really. It's views. And I'm saying
views. And
having
my views
97 million views, that just means that's something you should just like wear on a pin badge. Just on your shirt all the time. Like, I've achieved this many views.
This many views on YouTube. So off of the backbones of that, I got a gig to do a bunch of these shorts in like a serial format to just tell an overall story for a TV show on Disney.
Yes, I remember
2015. And it was off of the backbone of that Hunger Games animated music video. And I was like, you saw that one and not the better one I did a year later that's much better. And they were like, no, we haven't seen that one. And I'm like, oh, sweet.
Yeah.
that means the quality I can do can be less and they'll still be good with it. But I did that. That was a great thing to do, to have like a proper client project. And this was like in my second year of uni as well. So it was funny when at uni and you're going through like all these career, like get ready to have a job type of classes when you were graduating and finishing. And they're like, okay, everyone's done an interview before, right? And then I like put my hand up. I'm like, every single time I've had an interview, people have been trying to get me to do the job rather than me going up for the job. Because I never worked retail. I never did anything like that.
Yeah,
I just
same
did,
as me.
I just did YouTube. I did like basketball refereeing on the weekends that like gave me like just pocket money to live off of. But it was just, yeah, I didn't have to have a, I've never worked a retail job.
Yeah, it was weird for me like 6 months ago when I came out of university and I wanted to, you know, get a full-time job in like the media industry. And it just sort of like, oh my gosh, this is my first ever real proper job. Because like, since I was about 15, 16, I'd been making money through YouTube and I was just like, well, I don't need to go and get like a Saturday or Sunday job. I don't need to do anything like that. And then at university, the money that I had from YouTube, even though I wasn't making as many videos, still tides me over because it's like evergreen sort of thing. Like people still watching these videos and like there was just no need for it. And so like when I went ahead and was like interviewing for stuff like earlier on, like last summer, it was just so bizarre because it was like, I've never done any of this before. And like all of like, these people had all of this
experience. What prior job
experience
do you have?
And I was like, YouTube? But then I always found that interviewers really like that, like because they know that you're more knowledgeable about social media and YouTube and online video than they tend to be, because a lot of the people who are in high positions in these companies have transitioned from TV and film. And so for me, I think it's such a big advantage. And like, I just wish that I like made more videos back when I was younger, just because it probably would have like helped my experience even more with it.
Okay, yeah, there was this like animation film festival for like school students back in Perth, based around a local like science exploration center. And every year that run, I won it. And then that was like 5 years in a row. And then that stopped happening.
They're like, we can't let him win again. Yeah.
But that was like the main reason why I kept doing animation. Because I never really animated anything. I was kind of just playing around with software, but not actually. Some of the times, for like 2 or 3 years, I didn't open up a 3D software or open up like something to edit a film in until like 2 weeks before the deadline for that. And then I just made this like 2 minute animation in a few weeks.
And then you've got like this poor person who's just spent 2 months just like every day working. I'm going to win this. And you just come out come out and do it.
I mean, like... some kids started to actually like learn quite quickly, and I was genuinely surprised. I thought I was going to lose it a few years, but I didn't.
A little humble brag.
Yeah, I don't like bragging about that stuff, but it happened. So it's, I mean, just
from the sounds of it, it was like when you were quite young, it seems like there was so much stuff that you did like externally to YouTube. Like you entered into all of these different things, you met loads of different people your age who were doing that. For me, and even up to this day, I just cannot find anyone who does sort of like YouTube like I do. Like, honestly, all of my YouTube friends are from like Serbia, you know, Northern England, Australia, America, like France. I have Polish, like I have so many international friends on YouTube, but I don't know anyone in London, and it really baffles me because I think so many people must live in London and do YouTube, but I search for it online.
There are so many.
And I just, there are, but for me, they don't do what I do. And a lot of the bigger England or London
really big. So it's
they're really big, and a lot of them are in like cliques. Like they just don't let anyone in. They stay in like that 8 to 15 like YouTube friend circle, and like because it basically, if you get into that position, you just cross promote on everyone, and just everyone builds their way up. It's how like Alfie Days and Zoella and all those people did it.
Yeah.
Very similar to, I guess, with Jake Paul and like Team 10 now. Like they just lift each other up so easily because they can just spread that content. And so when I like listen to people like you who are just like, oh yeah, I had like all of this stuff, I just find it so bizarre how like Australia must be like so open and accepting of like just creating like media things like that.
Well, I mean, I'd like to say that we have like no funding for it whatsoever, like government wise. But a lot of places, like I read things from places like Valve and other like film studios, and it's like, we don't really have a game industry in Australia at all. I think a survey came out last year that said we have like 900 people in the entire country that work full time on games. And I would like say 70% of them are just people doing it themselves who just earn enough to survive off like Steam sales, earning basically nothing. And then the film industry here is like, it's so small. It's basically all just commercials. But everywhere else in the world, you read things from Valve and it's like 50% of their company is just Australians. And it's just probably because we're so like isolated from the rest of the world, being our own continent island, just sitting in the middle of the ocean, separated from the large areas like America and Europe, which are right next to each other, like relatively sense.
Yeah, yeah.
But it just lets us fester our creativity more. Like, you don't want to go outside because it's too hot. Right now it's like 35 degrees outside and it's 11 o'clock at night. Like, you don't want to go outside. You want to stay on. You want to stay inside with the air conditioning. You don't want to, you know, battle snakes outside. That never happens.
Yeah, as I say, if you go out there, you'll probably end up getting killed by like a tarantula or something.
Exactly. So we stay inside and we make things. So that's what I think of Australia. But I think that's also the same as everywhere else in the world.
So when you were like growing up then, once you got to that point, you sort of just turned it into like a freelance, like business sort of thing for yourself, just by animating shorts and music videos for like bigger YouTubers. I mean, how did you get to that point? Was there a point where you just thought, well, I'm going to like focus a lot on this? Or did you decide that it was just going to be literally like a part-time thing that you do on like the weekends and like carry on with university? Or is there ever a point where you were thinking, you know, I should just do this full time?
Well, most of the videos I did while I was studying and when I started like, you know, earning money from doing stuff, it was all creating like music videos for the same person or working with friends to create things. And then also the Disney thing on top of that. But most of the time it was just, I wanted to make like a video a year, like a music video every year with this person. And then the Disney thing came through and I needed enough money to like survive, which was basically nothing because I was like living at home with my parents. I didn't go somewhere else to study, which I probably should have to have gotten like a better education. But talking to people all around the world, it's like the better education doesn't really exist.
Yeah, from my experience.
We've had discussions about that for hours at night between Jamie and I. But don't think I ever thought about doing it full time. And I don't think I ever thought of it as doing it like as a part-time thing. It was just, I feel like doing this now, so I'm going to do it. And I was just in a very lucky situation where I had people who were willing for me to do whatever and pay me for it.
I think that's probably why you had a lot of success with it. I think that a lot of people who just make the stuff, especially for like YouTube, just because they enjoy it and they want to be a part of it, are the people who actually rise and get to like a great level with it. The people who go into it trying to become famous or make money, they get frustrated because they don't have the patience to get through those early days where it's a struggle. I think like in the last week of like the YouTube partner program, like them changing it so that you need like 1,000 subscribers, 4 hours of watch time, or you don't get paid. And like it was trending on Twitter, and you had like all these little small channels complaining. And I was like looking at their channels, and like over half of them, I'd say probably 3/4 of them, were YouTube channels that were either uploading the same content as someone else that was stolen.
Yep.
It was either like random videos that would have like no context, just like their friend like jumping on a trampoline was one of them that I saw. And it's like, and that's getting advertised to people and like making their money. And it's like, that's still costing YouTube a lot of money in ad dollars to give that to you, when literally it'd be better served and more worthwhile going on bigger channels. And so like, there's this big like, oh, YouTube are killing the smaller channels and we're going to die and they're not going to make any more content. There's going to be no newer YouTubers that are coming up now. In 10 years time, we're still going to have the current ones. It's like, no. The people who enjoy this, who do it for fun, like how we did when we were younger, that's how you would then build it up. I think if you're going into it for money or for anything like that, you've already like lost in a way. You've already shot yourself in the foot, because if it's fun and those things come along with it, then that's the best point to be in. But if you're just doing it for money, then it is a job, and it's a job that you'll get frustrated with when YouTube externally changes something, or if your viewers start to go down. You know, it's just, it's a mess. I think that's probably why you've had success and didn't see it as like a job, because you're like, oh my god, I need this amount of money per month to survive. You would probably end up doing things that would probably harm your channel just to get those extra, you know, few bucks.
Exactly. Yeah, so a lot of the content on my channel, so when I was creating things myself, it was just little things I wanted to make. Most of the time it was ripping off other people's work. Like the
Minecraft movie.
I did the Tom Scar Astiff movie, and that's like that was the most viewed video on my channel. And then I made the Lego Movie trailer parody.
I love that. That was so good.
Of Minecraft. And that was like, I was going on holiday to America while that was coming out, because in Australia the movie was released like 3 months after everywhere else in the world. So I was lucky that I was going on holiday while it was coming out. So before I left, I was like rushing to make this thing, and I'd been wanting to do it for a while.
Yeah, that deadline.
But I just putting it off. So like the deadline was, I'm getting on a plane tomorrow. I can't do anything. I think I was even up. I think I uploaded it the morning I left, and then while I was at like the airport checking in, I was like on my phone, like writing the description and everything.
Oh, so you're like really like last minute.
Yeah, really last minute, just rushing to get it done. And a lot of the things I hate, half of it, but it got done, and it got big. And then I ended up working at the company that made the movie. And I was so glad, because they have companies who make like pop culture movies like that. Everyone who makes them is like, they want to see how people react, and they like it when people react well. And when they remake their things, you know, out of cardboard, or like they remake the Lego Movie trailer out of actual Legos, like that sort of thing. So I found this document on like the internal company wiki from like within all the files of the original Lego Movie, and I found the document was a bunch of fan-made things about the trailer.
Were you in there?
And no, and I'm kind of glad that I wasn't.
Oh, really? How come?
But clicking everything in there, nothing got as big as mine, so I'm kind of surprised that I didn't, like, show up in there. But that could have also been because mine came out when the movie came out rather than when the actual trailer came out, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it might have been.
But I was kind of surprised because I'm super embarrassed of it. I didn't want to tell anyone at work what my YouTube channel was because I'll just be like, oh, they're watching me, like, redo their work in a more terribly. That sort of thing.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I think that's just the best way to do it. I mean, I remember I had like a similar thing years ago now when I think it was like, it was the Avengers or they had like a Spider-Man movie or something coming out.
Oh my God,
and like,
the Avengers.
And like, I always used to like look ahead and be like, what movies are coming out? What's going to be trending soon? What are people going to be searching for? And I think it was like the Avengers was coming out. And so what I did was, because I was like, at the time I was doing a gaming channel, I was doing YouTube, like Minecraft videos. And there was like this superhero mod where you could literally become the character and you get all these special abilities. And I made like a series of like seven videos. That was like, one was Spider-Man, one was Hulk, one was Thor. I think I actually did like Superman, even though it was DC. I did all of those sort of things. And like, they got quite big and then they like shot up. And I'm like looking at them right now. And it's like, Spider-Man got 100K views. Iron Man got 56K views.
Which
Wolverine
was very impressive
73.
For you back then as well.
For back then, yeah, it was huge. Like, and I was like really proud that I sort of like thought to do that with like the movies, like thinking, you know, people are going to be searching for that. It's going to get big. And like, that's probably what helped get you up in that instance, was that Minecraft was huge at that time. And the Lego movie was pretty much a big deal at that point, because we'd never had like a Lego movie before that looked like that. And
yeah,
just, it's just those things where the stars align and the video will just skyrocket.
I do remember what actually got me to do more stuff was I started doing like live action shorts and VFX shorts and things on YouTube. And I started doing like drawings and let's plays and animations and machinimas. And machinimas was a big thing for me back then in Minecraft. And it was basically the content that I'm making now for myself is all reliant on what people wanted to watch back then.
Yeah, it's very similar
to
me.
So it was always, oh, this got 25 views instead of 8. That means more people want to watch it. And it was like, that's what it was. Things were getting like 50 views when other things were getting like 15. And I was like, this is what people want to watch. So I'm just going to make more of that because I like making anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I used to do a similar thing with like regular show and Adventure Time. Like, I could tell that was a trend back in like 2012, 2013. And so I just started producing videos like that. And like, I think my biggest video is like 4.2 million and it's a regular show. And then like five videos under that is like an Adventure Time video. And then I did another one, like a map review of the house on the mission. Like, just finding trends like that, I think, especially in like gaming, is very, very easy because you just merge two worlds. And like, I did things with like Gmod, like Freddy Fazbear with like Five Nights at Freddy's. I would combine that with like Minions and yeah, stuff like that, because I know like kids will love Minions, and like that was big at the time. And so like that shot up to like 500,000. And see, I just think capitalizing on trends like that is very easy in like the gaming sphere. I feel like outside of that, it's a bit harder, and you can tend to fall into like that Jake Paul, Logan Paul camp of just trying to like capitalize on trends, but in a bad way. Mm. And
yeah,
I know, I think gaming is just a lot more innocent when it comes to it. But yeah, let's move on a little bit here.
Let's move on to a different subject.
So I mean, like, so for instance, just how long does it take you to like make a 3-minute animation?
Well, it largely depends on what's happening.
Okay.
In everything. So like, I could, if I really wanted to, I could make like a 3-minute animation in like a week of working on it full time, but it wouldn't be really good. The latest music video I put up on the Baden Canadians channel, we were working in like brackets on it for like a year. But that's because I left and I had a job then, and then I didn't want to work on it at night and that sort of thing. But overall, like, I think 3 months is probably a good thing if I'm working on it like relatively part-time and full-time sometimes to make mm-hmm. something that I'm relatively happy with. But if it was something that I'm really keen to do, if I work on it like all the spare time I have, I'd get it done much faster. It's a very difficult thing to say.
Yeah. So it, I know, like, for a lot of people, it does take a long time. I guess in your case, with the experience that you have, you like jump over all of that. I remember years ago trying to do some animations, and it used to take me forever. Like, animation just doesn't like work with me in like the sense of like 3D like rigs. Like, I struggle with that when it comes to like motion graphics or 2D or like VFX. Like, that's a lot easier for me. But when it came to like rigs and like step by step trying to like get it wrong, it would take me days to do about, I don't know, like 5 seconds worth.
Yeah, I don't even know why I really started doing it, because it was extremely difficult. And I was like 11 years old or something, and following, and this is back, I was using Blender back in the days where people actually said, don't learn it because you can't. But mm-hmm. I somehow did. Because there was like very little tutorials, and the user interface was not helpful at all. Like, you had to use 3 buttons on the mouse. Like, your middle click was actually a key feature of the software, and you selected things with right click. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no. I remember that.
And it's still like that now, but it just eventually gets burned in. I've probably learnt with experience, I'm actually wanting to spend more time to make it better mm-hmm. than using my experience to make it get it done quicker, which I have found as well, because I'm more experienced in like how things move. I can generally make something animate relatively quickly.
So like, what like tools and programs do you use now then to like animate and edit? Like, do you use like Maya, Blender, 3ds Max?
So I use at home, I use Blender, and I'm wanting to transition into Maya, because I use Maya at, I'm saying it different every single time I pronounce it. I call it Maya.
Maya. That sounds very Australian. Maya.
Maya. But I use Maya at work. I did use XSI at work in Sydney, but that was... I use Maya at work, so I want to like rebuild everything that I've built in Blender in Maya. But the reason I haven't switched is because I have everything built and I don't want to redo all that work, sort of thing.
I mean, from what I found at uni was that like the Autodesk sort of like family of like 3ds Max and Maya and all of that, they seem to be coming more like the industry standard, where stuff like Cinema 4D and Blender seems to be sitting on like the, you know, that free spectrum of just getting started, you know, for young people.
They are very powerful things, but everything has its own pros and cons. Mm-hmm. Like, technically, we have Blender installed at work. It's like a version from 5 years ago, and I keep on forgetting to tell them to change it because I want a newer version. Mm-hmm. But the version of Linux we're running can't take the latest, so it's like, oh, this iffy stuff. But like, I used Blender the other week on a feature film because it was just easier for me to do the work.
And I
could get the work done quicker. So it's just more a case of what you're used to. And for all my video editing and any compositing and things like that, I just use everything Adobe. Like, I use Premiere to edit. I use After Effects to do compositing. Sound mixing in Audition, Photoshop for like painting things and doing textures and
so do that you like sort of stuff. Edit it all scene by scene like in Maya or Blender and then render everything out individually, or and then like put it into Premiere?
Depending on how fast I'm wanting to go. If I'm wanting to make an animation really quickly, it's gonna take too long for me to like get like viewport renders, so like really quick things to like put out. but it's going to take me too long to do like a shot by shot thing mm-hmm. and then import that all into Premiere and then edit it and then change my mind for a shot. So I do it all. So there's just features in Blender where I could like set down a cut point and then I want that cut point to then switch to this camera. I can then just drag that around in the timeline in Blender. So I'm cutting in Blender and then that renders and I just plop all of that into Premiere. Mm-hmm. sort of thing for each scene or each big key moment before I need to physically make a new scene file because a rig changes or the set is significantly updated, that sort of thing.
Oh, right, okay. Because I know, like, I've watched you animate from time to time because I know, like, on your YouTube channel, you used to do, like, live streaming whilst you just animated. Yeah. Is that sort of, like, document the process of that or do you simply just get bored of like listening to music and podcasts and just want to have someone to talk to whilst you edit away?
Well, I like teaching. So like when I finished uni, because I didn't have a job and I kind of needed to get a job, I went back to my uni and taught because they wanted to have me. I did leave that like mm-hmm. 5 weeks into the semester to go actually take a proper job in the industry. And they probably didn't like me for that, but oh well, I went to work on Lego. but I like interacting with people who want to learn, and that seems to be a lot of the people that come to my live streams, like people who want to
mm-hmm.
learn more. Or
I think a lot of people just like that, just watching something, especially if it's live, and just seeing how it all comes together. I think that sometimes can be more like a 3 hour, like if you had the time, a 3 hour, well, yeah. I guess if you're a young person and you're getting in something like that, having 3 hours to just sit and watch how they get from like step 4 of that process up to like step 12 is just so much more beneficial than watching like a squeaky clean polished edited version of a tutorial, if you know what I mean, that's done in like 10-15 minutes. I think people like that.
Yeah, they do. And with me it was also a point where I started not being able to motivate myself enough to actually do the work. So doing something like a live stream, even if I didn't keep the viewer numbers on my screen and I just had the chat open so I could like respond to people's questions, so I didn't know how many people were watching, I could have just been live streaming to myself, and I did a couple of times for hours. But it's just the idea that someone's watching, so I can't mess up
mm-hmm.
and I have to do the work and I want to explain the work, and it gives me something to do while I do the work.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good, and being able to talk to people and be like, hi person, welcome back to the stream, I sort of remember you from last time, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It was just a fun time, and I would love to continue doing live streams. And if I had the internet now, I've moved all around the place and currently don't have the internet like that I actually need to do a live stream, but if I did, I would be working on so much stuff in my free time. Because I have that motivation there.
Yeah, I mean, I started probably like 4 months ago. I did a single live stream of me like making a thumbnail. Mm. And then earlier again, this week, I started doing live stream of me just editing a video. Yeah, and that was just inspiration for what you used to do. Because I was just thinking like, editing is just like one of those things where you just sit in a room and you stare at a screen for like 8 hours sometimes, like it just so doesn't long. End. And like sometimes, especially if you're like editing, you can't always like listen to music or podcasts because it interferes with what you're editing. Whereas just having someone there who's watching you, it kind of like keeps me in my chair and stops me from procrastinating. Like that's one thing.
Yeah.
And then like the second thing is if anyone does ask questions, it's nice just to have that little mental break to just like talk to that person in live stream, answer their question, and then get back to it. I find it very similar to when you're like, I'm a video editor for a company, and like we edit stuff for like MTV, Graham Norton, you know, like parenting stuff as well. Yeah. And having someone like to the side of you every now and again when you just sort of like hit that wall, it's great to just sort of like talk to them for like a couple of minutes about something completely different and come back to it, and you're in a different headspace. Or you can ask them, say, hey, what do you think of this cut? They can give you their opinion. When you're just sat by yourself in your chair at like 4 in the morning, there's no way to like get another person's reaction. But if you're live streaming, you can do all of those things. So it kind of takes you out of being like a a freelancer who's just sort of like been given stuff to do, and you've made it like a community thing where you have an audience and they can help you shape that edit. So like, I really enjoy it for those reasons. And like, it all is thanks to you, Jaden. So thanks for telling me to do that.
No problem. Glad to help you. And it always comes, like, I always interacted with them and then I put them in the video, because if they were there half the time while I was making it, why not just, I needed background characters. Why not just chuck them in there? And it's just this whole sense of community coming together.
Yeah, I think live is just one of those things that really helps solidify viewers. Takes like viewers and turns them to subscribers, but like the hardcore subscribers who always watch what you do. Because like,
yeah,
a lot of people come and go, but I feel like if you're someone who like really interacts with your fans on YouTube, or if it was like on Instagram, for example, or like, even if you like just like someone's tweet on Twitter, like that can mean a lot to a lot of people. And it's like, I've had subscribers who have followed me for like 4 or 5 years now, especially when I was at university and I didn't produce anything, they stuck around. And like, I think it was like last week, one of my subscribers who I just followed because it like made their day, they were live streaming, I think it was like PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. And I literally just liked the tweet and replied and said, I'm watching. And then I just like waited. I just sat on Twitch and was waiting for them to realize. And then like freaked out when they saw that message. And like you could see how happy it made them. And I think just doing little things like that, when it's like a live interaction rather than just like a little mention in a video or not at all mentioning them, can help like your viewers stick around. And I think people who work that fact out, especially if they're like really huge, can like get to the next level. And even happens with like celebrities, like what's that guy's name from Stranger Things, the cop? His name's like Hop in the show, but do you know his name in real life?
I can't remember.
Well, you know what I mean, right? But he's doing something that I've noticed. Like, okay, so celebrities, like the really big ones, what I've seen that they do is they will do something un-celebrity-like, because celebrities get put on this pedestal, right? So like when Taylor Swift turns up at someone's wedding, it makes news. Everyone goes, oh my God, she's so nice. She'd like surprise her fan at a wedding. And it's like, Taylor Swift, she probably did that for her fans, but she knows that like a lot of benefits are going to come. Yeah, it's like she knows how to like hack culture in that way. And I've noticed that like this guy who plays Hop in Strange Thing, because I can't think of his name that right now, but he's doing the same thing. So last week on Twitter, it was all over my feed, all over Facebook as well, saying how someone was like, how many retweets for you to come to my prom or something like that.
Oh, and he was like, I saw that one.
Yeah, and he was like 50K or something like that. Everyone obviously does it. So his face thing gets put into so many people's feeds. He then obviously follows through with it. It then gets blown up even more. The media coverage it. And it puts him in like, when I saw it, it immediately put me in the frame of this guy is like Chris Pratt, because I feel like Chris Pratt and like Jennifer Lawrence, those kind of characters, they've mastered that art. And I think the people who can work that out in like the internet YouTube sphere can really help bring themselves onto like the next level. And I don't know, like if there's a small YouTuber who's listening right now, there's a free tip. Go and like do something like that.
Interact with your community.
And
to get your name out there, basically. It's just networking, I guess. As everything comes down to, you could just say, oh, it's networking and marketing.
Yeah,
it's everything's like, networking.
Yeah, it's like if you spend like 10 hours a day just replying to comments on your videos, speaking to people and actually engaging on Instagram with people who are like on your level, they will probably check out your profile, see your content, subscribe, and you can build it up that way. Like you haven't got to just rely on like YouTube's algorithm or Instagram like featuring your posts. Like you can do it other ways.
Like how many, I have almost 2,000 followers on Twitter. And I barely post anything, and they're probably just all there from when I did like Minecraft animations for the Beijing Canadian. But whenever I get a like on a post, that just like makes my day. It's like, people actually care about what I'm doing. And like, I know who my friends are who like almost everything I post sort of thing. But it's just when it's someone else who I don't know, it's like, oh, that's cool. And then I go check out their Twitter, and then if they're cool, I might follow them.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's just to see that people like your stuff is a great motivation to actually doing the work.
You've got like so much experience when it comes to like animation, and then so much when it comes to like creating like fiction films and documentaries and of that sort. And like you're working at like Rising Sun Pictures. You're kind of like merging that in a way, right? So you've got like the animation, like the VFX side of things, but you're doing it with like real life video, right? It's not like completely animation now, like your stuff on your YouTube channels are. So I mean, because
it's at Rising Sun, it's more live action.
Yeah, like live VFX. Action stuff. Because, I mean, like, when I looked at their website, they've worked on, like, Thor, Logan, Game of Thrones, Hunger Games. So they tend to, like, focus a lot in that area. I mean, like, for you, do you feel like, with it being Australia, do you feel like there's a ceiling that you'll hit there? Or do you feel like you need to... Because I know we've spoken before about you, like, moving to London. Because you were like, oh, I really like some of the companies in, like, London, or, like, Framestore, like... Is that like something that you feel like is more likely to happen, or is it just sort of like a dream?
I think it comes down to circumstance. The only reason I'm wound up where I am here is because I was finishing up at Animal Logic in Sydney after working on the Lego Ninjago film and Peter Rabbit, and I was finishing up there, and I was too scared to put a demo reel together to send to like the London studios, because I'd love to move to London. Like, I love London. London's a cool place.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of work there.
Oh yeah, there's so much stuff here. Like, if you were to visit there and go to either like Soho or Shoreditch,
yep, Soho is
every
like,
company is just there in
they're
every
all
regard.
On the same block.
Yes, they really are. Like, they're all in Soho.
That's what it is. But I feel like in Australia, I think where I am now is probably one of the better places in the country, because everyone, it feels, wants us to do work for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've done like some incredible work, like the ending sequence in Gravity, where the Soyuz is like breaking apart and falling back to Earth in this heavenly moment. That was all done by the studio I'm working at.
Mm-hmm.
And like the slow motion parts of X-Men in the recent films of, I think, like Days of Future Past, where they go into like the kitchen and it's all like frozen slow motion time.
Yeah, I know.
That was all my company as well. And the Valkyrie slow motion with the spinning lights in Thor Ragnarok, that was here as well. And it's like the work that we're doing is so ridiculously good, and the tax credits that are now available in our state are just off the chain, that I wouldn't be surprised if more people move, if more companies move to Australia move to Adelaide to take advantage of the tax credits and the enormous amount of creative talent that's here. And it's also much cheaper to live in Australia, in Adelaide, than it is to live in Sydney or like London and Vancouver.
Yeah, where,
like, rent's extremely high.
Yeah, but when they move, that rent's going up.
But like, it's a company of like 200 people, I think. That might be a completely inaccurate number. But
like 200 is quite like, small though, isn't it? For like movies, no, for that big, isn't it?
Well, I mean, yeah, there's companies that have thousands of people and like 500 people or something, but it's still a decently large company. But even for Australia, just for an independent company in Australia, that's a pretty large place.
Mm-hmm.
Not many like sole CEO-run companies in Australia, especially in Adelaide, where there's like 1 million people. Like, the population is tiny. That's a very large company to run.
That's true, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
So it's just... it's ridiculous that this sort of thing exists here.
So are you thinking more like, do I stay where you are and like grow up within that company, learn more, and then when eventually these companies start to move, you can then like move into a better position and be more creative with it? Or like, sort of, it's just a question of like, do you want to be a big fish in like a small pond that's getting larger, or do you rather just like come straight to like LA, or if you went to London, where, you know, it's huge and you'd be like a bit of a small fish, but the work's so much bigger in a way and you'd have a lot more of it? And it's, you know, it's just like comparing those two and then just taking a risk and choosing one really and sticking with it.
I think for me right now, I mean, I'm not at the point where like I have to take a job because like I have nothing else to do. Yeah. I think where I am, it's down to the work that the company's done in the past and the work that I know they're going to do in the future. Because you can find that by researching online. But like, I went to Animalogic, one, because they're one of the only companies that actually responded to me sending through a resume when I did at like the end of uni, when my parents like forced me, go get a proper job. It was like the only place to reply back, and I got the job there. But the reason I went there was because, one, they're like the one of the largest effects and animation companies in Australia, but they've done Happy Feet, they did Legend of the Guardians, they did the Lego movies.
They've done a lot.
And the quality of work there is ridiculous. And I was like, I want to go work on a Lego movie. And I didn't think I would at all. And then I got offered the job and went over there.
Do you think that you got the job because of the trailer that you made?
No. Or do you think it was not because...
Okay.
I think...
I'm just wondering why...
The department that I was in needed people at the time. So they were like, okay, like, this guy said he's free and he can do it, so let's just get him over and he can learn it and do it. And that's what it really was. But it was also, I had experience. I was willing to learn. I wasn't like 5 years into working in the industry, so they didn't have to pay me like, you know, top rates or anything. Like being a junior, that sort of thing. But it was a great experience because I was working on a CG animated film, which is what I eventually want to be doing. I want to go and make like animated films rather than VFX things. But I'm happy to do the VFX things in the meantime because it's still working in the film industry because I love movies. And so I think that overall I would be happy to just go wherever the work is that I want to be doing.
Yeah.
Or,
I mean, that's the best thing, because then you're always going to be happy with what you're producing. Like, that's just like the ultimate long-term goal, really, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, I know the work that Animalogic is going to be doing over the next year, because you have company meetings and they say, and they tell you what they're working on.
Yeah.
So I know what they're working on over the next year. And I would have gone and worked, I had the opportunity to go and work on the second Lego movie in Vancouver. And I was like, I was so close to doing that. But for like other reasons, I couldn't. So I decided to go to where I am now. But it's like, I know what they're doing. So I'd be like, okay, like I would love to go back there when my contract here ends, but I'd also love to stay here if they want to renew my contract, because it's a great city. It's like, it's a good company doing good work with good people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it also comes down to, is do you fit in well with the people on your team? And if you do, then you'll probably stay where you are.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you've got your head screwed on, like you've worked a lot of it out. You've got things going. I mean, I'm going to start to wrap it up now, because you've been going for quite a while. Just one last thing, like for someone who is in that position of either being like an animator or a cinematographer who's like on the come up, what is like some advice that you'd give to them now?
I say, know what you want to be doing, in terms of when I did animation at university, like an animation major at university, it's just amping up the idea of physically doing animating, but nobody knows that there's modeling, there's texturing, there's people who make the skeletons, there's people who do the lighting, there's people who do the compositing of the images together after all of that. And there's people who then also worry about the cameras, which is the department and area that I wanted to go into. So, and then even in films, it's like, do you want to be the person setting up the lights? Do you want to be the person with the overall idea? Do you want to be a manager? Like, that sort of thing.
Yeah, there's so many ways you can go down.
A lot of people at university who are studying, or people who are, like, relatively new to learning, don't know that. So I say, research into the different areas, try out different things, and figure out what area you fit into, because a lot of the people at my university were like, I want to do animation, but then they never put the actual effort in to learn how to animate.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just like, they kind of just like, oh yeah, it's a uni assignment, I'm just going to do this in like the weekend before it's due, but because they're just not putting in the effort that they should be putting into to learn. And I say that's what it is. Find what area you want to be in.
Yeah, be specific for that area.
Be specific. It's good to know everything. Like, I mean, I probably did get the job where I'm now because I have done more generalist things before. It did also help that the recruiting manager that I was talking to, his kid had seen all the Hunger Games videos I did on YouTube.
Right. Yeah, that's probably really helped some
other, and then some other people in the Minecraft animation community have actually worked here before. So that was also useful, and they got in contact with them and they were like, oh, do you know this guy who's done Minecraft animation videos on YouTube? It's like, yeah, I do. He's pretty cool. That sort of thing. And then it's also getting to know people. Like, don't just, like, a lot of the people at my university, I don't think many of them are going to get so far in the film industry. Mm-hmm. But if they do, you want to stay their friend.
Yeah, it's true. A lot of it is because just networking.
A lot of it is networking. I feel like I would only be able to go back and get a job at Animalogic because I know my supervisor and could just chat with him about anything for hours. And we did multiple times mm-hmm. outside of work hours, not being paid to do that. And then the leads there and all the other artists. And then I'm like, I'm friends with them on Facebook and LinkedIn and that sort of thing. And it's just the networking actually helps. You don't think you want to do it, but networking mm-hmm. can be as simple as, like, I mean, it's not the type of thing I did before. Yeah, I got scared of the word at university. We did like networking days or whatever at uni with just the students.
And just having a conversation with a friend. Like, networking to me, whenever that people say, oh, you need to network to get ahead in this industry, I would like not like the idea of that, because to me it always sounded like it was you stood in a giant room with a wine glass in your hand, walking up to random people and just being like, hi, what do you do? So, you know, like, which they're like the worst thing. Yeah, I don't like that. The way I've managed to network is by just having genuine relationships with people and talking to them and being their friend. Like, that I think is more important than basically just going up to someone and being like, hi, what's your job? This is my job. How can you help me? Like, that's what it comes across to me when people try and do networking. For me, it's just like, talk to me like a human being about random stuff. And if I like you and your work's good, then from that point, it will help us go forward.
And I learned things. When you work in the industry, it's much easier to network with people within your company. So I was considering going into lighting or like compositing while I was in Sydney at Animalogic. And it was so easy just to be like, just message them on the instant messenger at work and be like, hey guy, like, do you want to get lunch sometime to like chat about stuff? And all the time everyone super like helpful and happy because they were all there once before as well. It's just, and then you become friends with them. You hang out with them. You might not hang out outside of work too much, but that doesn't matter because they still know
who you are.
You want to do the work and they know who you are.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's really good advice. I think, especially to like young people who may be listening, like that's something that I've learned a lot more recently. And I'd say, you know, it's one of the ultimate things that you can know, especially when it comes to like the creative / media industry. That's very good advice. Thank you, Jaden.
And also if you're getting into film, or VFX, just get used to alcohol.
Yeah, it's true. That's just the thing.
Is it's always a pub near work, something like mm-hmm. that. That's the only thing. I never used to drink before working in the industry, and now it's like,
yeah, yeah, I can vouch for that.
Because it's an easy way to talk to people.
Yes, yeah.
And to relax after
a lot of places that you film tend to give free wine and free beer all of the time. And I just think a lot of people just like drink it to get themselves in that mindset of networking. And then it is just a lot easier that way.
Well, everyone likes to do it every once in a while. So when the company gives you like free alcohol on a Friday night, after work, it's like everyone goes down and grabs one and then just talks to people, because you all see each other walking around the hallways and you nod and you're like, hey, and like you might not know them, but you could easily find out who they are by looking, like searching in the intranet of the company and being like, oh, that's that person and he does this and mm-hmm. oh, this is all the work he's doing right now. You can like really stalk people when you work at companies because of the like production management software and everything. But they say you can, like it's there for you to do that, to figure out, oh, is he going to be working on one of my shots? Should I tell him how I've set things up so it doesn't affect him or he doesn't waste time? That sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's always like it's there to be able to communicate with each other to either network or to do your work better and more effective.
Mm-hmm.
Because anything to get work done quickly is good.
It's good, yeah. Money. Yeah, it's true. All right, well, thanks for coming on the podcast, Jaden. I think you gave a lot of advice there. It's interesting to hear a lot about your backstory and how you got involved in it as well. Mm. You know, where do you want people to find you? Do you want me to link up your Twitter, your Instagram, your YouTube, all three? Where do you want people to go?
You could link. Yeah, so my Twitter's at Jaden Bev, and that's just generally seem to be posting a lot more about game development stuff these days, because that's just things I'm doing at home in my spare time, because when you work all day doing animation, you don't really want to do that at home anymore. Mm-hmm. My Instagram, where I put all my photography and I post photos of my cinematography and things like that, I forget what that is. I think that's Jaden Bevo, so O at the end of the Bev, like on Twitter. And then, yeah, my YouTube channel of Atomic Monkey Pro, where I post my animations and stuff. Check me out. If you want to ask me any questions, tweet me, email me. My email is in my business email on YouTube. Just find me and I will talk to you.
Yeah, he will reply.
like we said earlier.
Yeah. All right, yeah, I'll put all of the links in the show notes. So they'll be in like the top three lines. You can easily find that. So yeah, thanks again for coming on, and I'll speak to you soon.
So, there we go. That was my conversation with Jaden. There was a lot of really solid information and advice in this episode for those of you wanting to get started in the creative industry, and for those of you who are just starting out in this pretty fun industry, if I put it that way. And as I mentioned before, all of Jaden and myself social media information is in the show notes below in this podcast episode. So if you do have any questions about what we've talked about, any other advice we've given, be sure to just hit us up, message us on Instagram, email us, message us on Twitter, whatever it may be. As we said many times through this episode, we really do enjoy it when people reach out and want to talk to us, and you 100% will get a response. But that's it for this episode. Thank you all for listening and for getting this far. I really do appreciate it. It's like I said, this is only the second episode. I have a lot more in the bag. And I shall all see you in the next one.